And it's I started thinking about this, and I guess it may be because the Western culture is so dense and so lacking in maturity of spiritual understanding, so we have a hard time comprehending or realizing some of these basic truths that are so easily understood by those of Indian origin or those who have Indian descent. For example, we have a hard time realizing or even grasping the concept that the Acharya continues to be present eternally in his teachings, his writings, his places, Tirtha, and so forth. Why do we bow before Rupa Goswami's Samadhi? And why do we pray before the beads and the shoes and so forth of great saints like Rupa and Sanatan? Before the footprints of the great saints and the Acharyas? It's because they're present at those places and we're able to make a connection. We're able to actually feel the presence more strongly than in our regular day-to-day life. And it's because of the understanding that they're present in these places. Why does every temple have a special room set aside for Acharya, whether he was ever physically present at the temple, and some of his things are placed there, just like at so many temples we have, and so many temples in India, you see some items that were used by the great saints. And it's so that the devotees of that lineage, whichever lineage it is, sampradaya it is, can go there and offer their respects and pray and feel the presence of the Sampradaya Acharya. So these are all really common understandings in Indian culture, but not in Western culture generally. A lot of people who come have a hard time understanding these things. Well, partly because of the Maidesha, partly because our Judeo-Christian heritage has a strange concept, an unfortunate cultural concept that the Acharya can be killed or exterminated or somehow destroyed, the messenger of God, like with Jesus Christ and so forth. Whether we're on the killing side or the non-killing side, the faulty concept is the same, that the messenger of God can be killed and hung up to dry. But this concept, it's completely erroneous because the divine souls who are sent here to teach, like Srila Prabhupada, these beings don't fall under the sway of the same Maya or her agents. Such personalities like Srila Prabhupada, they come from the spiritual world to teach, or as in his case, he used to say, to write some books. And they aren't under the same laws as the people in the prison house, like us. They have great powers and they're connected at all times to the Supreme Lord. And as such, they remain equally approachable, whether they're in physical form, physically manifest form, or in the form of a deity, a Murti, or their books, or their teachings, or their articles that they use, the beads, just like there's so many small museums where Prabhupada's things are kept. Photographs, he used to say that he is present in his photograph, and that we can look at his photograph and be in touch with him by chanting Hare Krishna and looking at his photograph. So they're present, such personalities as Srila Prabhupada are present, and as the sunshine is present, and only it's like a cloud over the conditioned soul, he can't understand this. And that cloud is an individual one. Not all souls will have such a cloud. And I've noticed that those of Indian birth are able to grasp this concept so easily, and those of us who've been born in the West have a harder time with it. And I've actually heard sometime Westerners say, oh, Prabhupada left this world in 1977. Or even say things like, oh, yes, he's dead. He left in 1977. He died in 1977. Which, of course, kind of jolts my bolts a little bit, but generally, a person from India wouldn't ever say or even think like that. They would understand that Prabhupada is just as present today and just as powerful and far-reaching in his spiritual form as he was in the 1970s. He's just as available. And they understand that by meditating and praying to Srila Prabhupada, either in the mind or heart, or meditating on his spoken and written words, or just simply holding his presence in the heart or looking at his photograph, one, we can establish a connection. And we can feel, we can actually receive love and inspiration and guidance and support. And for some people, I guess it's easier than others, but some people don't really believe it. But this is why Srila Prabhupada was able to produce so much work, so many different projects while he was present all over the world, while sitting at one place quietly and calmly chanting his japa. He explained this to me once. On many occasions, actually, but on one particular occasion, that the acharya is present within the heart of his disciples because the super soul is in everyone's heart. Krishna is in everyone's heart as super soul. And since the acharya is always in contact with Krishna, therefore, in that way, Srila Prabhupada explained, the acharya can be considered to be omniscient and omnipresent according to the extent that Krishna allows him to be present in his disciples' life. And so he can direct his disciples from within the heart and how to serve him. And we see that in the early days so much, where he would be sitting in one place and he would know what was going on in every part of the world. It was amazing. There were times whenever there would be a check lost in the mail, and he knew the check was lost in the mail before anybody else did. And he would already be talking about it. He would already be trying to solve it. It was just amazing. It's miraculous, these things. Now, I have so many personal experience myself of that, where I would be doing a drawing and carrying on a project, and I could feel Srila Prabhupada's guidance in my mind, in my heart, and in my hands. Sometimes, depending on my state of consciousness, it's harder to access it. But, for example, in growing the tulsi plants, Prabhupada was traveling and far away, yet he knew of my unexpressed desire to do this. And so I got some seeds from an Indian lady. Yet years later, in a lecture while we were visiting Mississippi, he commented, "I sent Govindadasi the tulsi seeds." For a moment I went, wait a minute, you know? And then I realized, yeah, he did. He sent the seeds to someone. And so he clearly knew and knows our hearts even now. He even wrote once in the first letter I ever received from him, "I know your mind." And he does even now. He continues to know the minds and hearts of all of his disciples and grand disciples, and anyone who approaches him with sincerity and trust. That's the mark of the acharya and the mantle worn by any great acharya, even now. So Srila Prabhupada is present here today and hearing our offerings and guiding us in everything we do. And I think that's the most important thing that we can remember today. Thank you.
Well, I'll try to tell some new stories. Everybody knows from my past stories that I was Prabhupada's flower boy. In other words, every time I would see Srila Prabhupada when he came to Bombay or when I was in Mayapur or wherever, I would give him a flower. And sometimes when he'd take the flower, he would touch my hand and take the flower and start talking about how wonderful it was, and so on and so on. Anyways, there was this new devotee who came to the Bombay temple. He had a master's degree in agriculture. So he started taking over the garden. And his name was Krishna Grudja. And I was taking flowers from his garden and giving them to Sri Prabhupada. And Prabhupada would often chastise me and say, why are you taking from this other guy's garden? I want from your garden. So anyways, one day, Sri Prabhupada said, okay, this is it. I'm fried with all this fighting that's going on. I want all three of you to come up to my room. So there was Krishna Grudger, another Indian devotee, and myself. We went into Prabhupada's room. And then he had a map of the whole Juhu complex. And he took a pen and marked it off in three sections. He said, this is yours. This is Krishna Grudger's and Shankara's. This is yours. Grow only in your own spot. No more fighting. So I got the back of the house where Prabhupada was staying, and I decided I was going to make a fruit garden for him. So I started growing banana trees and guava and chiku and papayas. What I do is I take a papaya seed, and I started it out, and in 9 months I would get papayas. Anyways, Prabhupada was going to London one time, or going around the world as we were going to the airport, and I was growing these strawberry bananas. Those are little bananas about this big, and they're pink inside, and they're very sweet. So I cut down a whole big stalk of these strawberry bananas, and I brought them to the airport. So Prabhupada was sitting there, and I walked up to Sri Prabhupada. I said, Sri Prabhupada, would you like a banana? And he said, these are from our garden. I said, yes, Sri Prabhupada. I grew them. So immediately he took a banana, he peeled it, and he ate it. And then he said, now pass them out. So I went all over the airport giving bananas to everybody. And Hari Kesh, took it as a chance to preach, jumped up on his table and started preaching. So it was a really nice thing. And then in 1974, I might have told this story before, but in 1974, Sri Prabhupada called me from Calcutta. And he told me he wanted me to come to Mayapur to do something for him. He didn't tell me exactly what it was. So Giri Raj, being Giri Raj, got me a third-class ticket on the train. They don't have third-class anymore, but I went third-class. And I was in this place all crowded with people and chickens and all kinds of things in this train, crowded out. Anyways, by the time I got to Calcutta after 2 or 3 days on the train, they had stolen everything. My suitcase, my shoes. All I had on was a dhoti and a kurta and a little pouch underneath where I kept my passport and money and stuff. So I got to Calcutta, and then I finally got to Mayapur. So the next morning, they were coming down for their morning walk, and Bhavananda went to Sri Prabhupada and said, Sri Prabhupada, your gardener from Bombay is here. So Prabhupada looked at me and didn't say anything, and we went on our morning walk. So we were going to all these temples and walking through all these fields and everything. And as we're coming back, as you're going through, there's this big archway in Mayapur. There's only one building then. And then right there were some cows. And I never knew anything about cows. I never seen a cow or anything, you know. So I seen these cows, and I started playing with the cows, you know, petting them and stuff. And the procession kept going towards the building. And then when it got pretty close to the building, Prabhupada turns around and says, Shankar, come here. So I go running up to Sri Prabhupada. Yes, Sri Prabhupada, what would you like me to do? Yeah, I want you to put trees on both sides of this road. So Jai Pataka Maharaj and about 5 Bengali boys and myself, we ran around digging up coconut trees, small coconut trees, and we planted coconut trees on both sides of that road. And they're gone now, but they were there for many, many years, and they harvested the coconuts from them, and now they're gone because they're building a planetarium, but that's another story. Oh, actually, that goes on, because I stayed in Mayapur then for a month, and Bhavananda and Jayapataka Maharaj would have me every night cook a 24-course feast for them. First, I'd offer it, of course. I'd use gobra gas, which is unbelievable to cook with. And then they would eat the whole feast at night. So that's what, and then I planted the first rose bushes in Mayapur. Me and Jai Pataka went down to stores. We bought roses and banana trees. I planted the first banana trees in Mayapur and the second marigold garden. So I did a lot of gardening in Mayapur for that month that I was there. And now one more little story. For those who are cooks, I told this before, but you should know this. On one day on a morning walk after I gave Prabhupada his flour, Prabhupada asked me, how much ghee are you using? I said, I was in charge of the kitchen and the ghee kitchen. I said, I'm using 1 kilo of ghee every day for all the ghee cooking and for all the devotee cooking. And probably that's too much. So I cut it in half. I was using a half a kilo of ghee. So about a week later, Prabhupada asked me, he said, how much ghee are you using now? I said, I'm using a half a kilo. And he said, you don't know how to cook. So you can see, you're supposed to use a lot of ghee in our cooking, according to Srila Prabhupada. And then for those of you who are taking care of Tulsi, one more story. I told this story before too, but it's a good understanding how compassionate Prabhupada was towards all living entities. There was this half-moon fence in front of the Bombay temple, just a shack, you know, and in there was a bunch of Tulsi plants. The Tulsi trees were really big, and they were that big around, with the stalks on them, they were really big, and they were dying. So probably after I gave Prabhupada his flower on a morning walk, he asked me, he said, why are the Tulsis dying? So I immediately went over there and checked the Tulsis. I dug around it, and I found the termites and the ants were eating the roots. So the next morning, Prabhupada asked me, so how are they doing? I said, well, Srila Prabhupada, there's all these ants and termites that are eating at the roots of Tulsi Devi. And he said, you take one part lime, one part sulfur, and 10 parts water, and you sprinkle this all around Tulsi, and all the ants will go away without killing them. So anyways, I did that, and Prabhupada went on his world tour. But, as you can guess, all the Tulsi died. So I ripped up all the Tulsi plants, tore down the fence, and there was nothing there but dirt. This was like a monument for the Bombay temple, this Tulsi garden that was in front of the temple. Tonight it was nothing. So Prabhupada came back from his world tour and was doing Guru Puja. I came out of the kitchen and gave him his flower, and I remember they were doing the ghee lamp. So I immediately went to see Prabhupada, gave him his flower, and he said, where are the Tulsis? I said, oh, shit, Prabhupada, I tried to save them, but they died, and then I just immediately hit the deck. Slid it out of the temple because I didn't want to get chastised in front of everybody in front of Guru Puja. So the next morning, on a morning walk, I had in the big garden, I had 34 Tulsi plants that were growing really good. So Srila Prabhupada stopped everybody and he asked me, he said, how are these Tulsis doing? I said, oh, Srila Prabhupada, there's these spider mites and aphids that are eating it. And Prabhupada said, you let the insects eat as much as they want. Who are you to kill them? So I was bewildered. I didn't know what to do because they were telling me you're supposed to dunk them in soap water and do all kinds of things. You know, these plants were so big. So what I did was a clump of aphids, I would just cut the branch after chanting the mantras and I would throw it over the fence. That's how I got rid of the insects. But I don't know, so many Tulsi worshippers have so many other ways that Prabhupada said that how to take care of it. That's what he told me. Anyways, Hare Bol. Okay, Prabhupada.
So Pushkar Prabhu and then Mother Vishakha. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. So we just read recently in Maja 8 the conversation between Ramananda Roy and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked him, what is the greatest pain? Krishna Bhakti Varaha Vina Nahi Duk Guru Tar. That was the answer. Ramananda Roy, he answered there that there's no pain other than separation from the devotee. So all over the world there's a pain, misery, Bhagavatam declares that Shokashru Sagara Vishoshanam Aptidara, in Kapila Dev's instructions, that by meditation on the lotus feet of Krishna, you can dry up the ocean of tears that this world is, everyone is suffering. So that gives us a clue that Ramananda Roy is on the level where he doesn't experience any mundane shokashru, means literally tears of lamentation. Sagara, an ocean of tears of lamentation. That would be difficult to explain to an ordinary person who is suffering like anything, that you have an ocean of tears. They're suffering. You can see every time you look at the news, people are suffering. They're bombed out or starving, disease, something. It's a very painful world. Therefore, if we follow strictly and the instructions and the leelas of Srila Prabhupada, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Ramananda Roy, we can come to this point. Rupa Goswami also says in the Ujjvala Nilamani, there's one verse, Sambhoga Pushni Mashnute, Vairagya, or Varaha, separation is, it nourishes meeting. So today is a day of separation, Varaha. And Jayanilo Premagana, we should be singing a song, and there's so many songs like that, and praise of how deep separation devotees feel, especially on a day like today. Bhajan should be flowing out. Of course, we're speaking now, but there should be the bhajans. Jayanilo Premagana, Vaishnava Thakur, the Vaishnava is bringing this prema to this material world, so to the point that we can relish hearing. Just before Prabhupada left, even 1 week before, he was speaking very, he was speaking so many things, but one of the things he kept saying was, the secretaries would say, but Prabhupada, you say you want to leave, you're ready to leave. He said, if I leave or not leave, it doesn't matter, because I've given everything already. What is the difference? Just like I am here because of my Guru Maharaj is inspiring me at every moment. So you should also feel the same inspiration. Some of Prabhupada's godbrothers, they were offended or they criticized Prabhupada that he didn't spend enough time going to the Samadhi of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. And before he left, he did go there. And Prabhupada responded that they do not know that my Guru Maharaj is sitting with me at every moment. But this feeling that, and this, how he had this power to. So he was imploring the devotees at the time, and he asked all the GDCs to come there, I think in May, June. Actually, I spent the last in Vrindavan, I was there, some maybe May or April, May, all the way to the last day. There was a time, I was trying to find it today, and I'll probably find it later, but a few days before, maybe 1 week, or one, I couldn't remember exactly, I had to find the date. But I was standing up in Krishna Balaram, you know, where the restaurant used to be, those who are old enough, upstairs, where you could almost see Prabhupada's quarters. You look out at the back gate, anyway. And I was standing with somebody, and they had these big rickshaws, and they had the flatbed rickshaws with big bags on them. And I just said, what are those bags? And they said, that's salt. The salt for the samadhi, for Prabhupada's samadhi. And this was several days before Prabhupada left. But this was being talked about. But it became very clear. I thought, wow, that day I was practically fasting. I just couldn't. It was kind of traumatic when I realized that Narayan Raj had come and informed, and he was arranging something, and the salt came. So at that time I was thinking, wow, Prabhupada's really, this is really serious stuff, and they were putting the strings across where the samadhi was going to be, Prabhupada was there. So this was a real thing, but at the same time we were always thinking, no, Prabhupada will stay, will stay. I was going one day in Mathura to actually bribe the immigration so I could stay longer. Anyway, I was coming from there and I got a tap on my shoulder. It was Prabhupada's godbrother, Krishnas Babaji. And I turned around, there was Krishnas Babaji He was a great personality. And he had an umbrella for the sun. And he said, how was your Prabhupada? How was your Prabhupada? And that particular day, Prabhupada had eaten something, and the Kaviraj had held out still some hope. So I told him, I said, well, Prabhupada, he took something, and he was dancing, and saying, oh, Krishna's mercy, Krishna's mercy. It was a very somber scene generally for many weeks, or even months. And then I remember being one time in Prabhupada's room, and he said, where is Babaji Maharaj? A very weak voice. He said, where is Babaji Maharaj? Because Krishna's Babaji was, he was a character right out of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, completely blissful and renounced and just always chanting ecstatic. And Prabhupada asked for him several times. Even said that you could take Babaji around Govardhan, even if I don't go, you take Babaji Maharaj. So that's something. And so when Babaji Maharaj would come, the atmosphere would go up naturally. In any case, there was this going back and forth about whether Prabhupada would... He was talking about going on the bullock cart. He said, either I will die here by Ravana, or I will go to Govardhan and die at the hands of Ram. Either way, And he was stressing over and over, I will leave, it doesn't matter. He wanted to, it didn't matter if, he said, so what if I die on the bullock cart? But I remember sitting next to Bhagaji outside Prabhupada's quarters and where the generator room used to be when we were sitting. I was sitting right next to him. I was completely bewildered. Is Prabhupada going to go on the bullock cart? And they were trying to stop him, and he wanted to go. You could barely turn him over. It was just, his bodily condition. So I said to Bhagavati, I can't remember if I was sitting on this side. I said, will Prabhupada go? And he went like this. He won't go. Like, you idiot. it was he won't go. I always remember that, he won't go. That kind of settled it for me. At Bhagavati, right, Chosan? He went, he won't go. Like, you, what do you think? Although they were, he was saying he wanted to go. This was Prabhupada's transcendental desire. I mean, Govardhan Puja was just a couple days ago, so that you can see, you know, close it was that was going on, all this back and forth. And during that period, you know, Prabhupada was very concerned about Mayavadis, especially in Vrindavan. It was one of his themes. And some big, big men like this, Sriman Narayan, he was, governor of Gujarat at one time. He came, and different governors would come. Big, big people. And there was a Gita Prasthan going on. And Prabhupada was criticizing again. He said, Gita Prasthan, what is this nonsense? Let them come and study with me, Gita. They didn't even want the devotees to speak about Gita. You can speak about your ISKCON activity. Because they were so wary of being chastised by Prabhupada and the devotees. This was they are simply Mayavadis. This whole Vrindavan, overrun by Mayavadis. Sometimes, most of the time, we're respectful to the... But he said, you have to be so careful. You can all be tricked. But they are all so many overrun with Mayavadis, this Vrindavan now. And they want to speak their nonsense. And then Giriraj was telling that Prabhupada, like in Bombay, we're building the hall and we'll be renting it out. And other places we rent to people, we really can't control what they say. He said, well then, if they pay, then they can speak their nonsense. But still, we must criticize them, smash them at every moment. So this is Prabhupada's mood, very strong. Personally, I was in Mayapur, and then I had to go to Vrindavan. Tamal Krishna wrote a telegram that I should go there. They were working on the fifth canto to correct the fifth canto. So we spent many, many days, Tamal Krishna, Yasodhanandan, and there was this guy, Prem Yogi. Became Prem Swami. Prem Yogi, he became Prem Swami. He was the only person to ever get first, second, and sannyas at one in this vision. So he was a Sanskrit man, And so we had a committee, and I would draw these drawings and bring them in to show Prabhupada. And Prabhupada was always, yes, yes, and big pieces of paper, we'd hold them in. And then one day, we drew the Mount Sumeru, and there were all the Digpal, eight cities, puris of the major devas, like Vayu and Chandra, Indra. In the middle is Brahmapuri. So Prem Swami, he said to Prabhupada that he has these big demigods. This is like this promised summer home. This is not actually Brahmaloka, but this is in Borloka, Jamadvip, the top of Mount Sumeru. And Prabhupada said, yes, yes, even ordinary man, he has nice summer home. Why not big demigods they can have? Like that. In fact, this Prem Yogi, he was a character who was translating the beginning of the Bhagavatam, first canto, and several other books. But Yasomati Nandan, Bhakti Charu, Gopal Krishna, they were all, of course, Hindi speakers. And they were, when I was in the room one day, they were complaining to Prabhupada, saying, Prabhupada, he is like a Mayavadi, he is giving his own interpretation. It's not very good translation. We don't like it. And Prabhupada said, but actually he is one of our men now, so blind uncle is better than no uncle. He had no other. He wanted these translations. He was so intent on getting the books out that even he would tolerate that. And anything. Huh? Oh, the last day. Actually, I was saying I went to the CID, I think they called it, Central Immigration, and I had bribed them, so I thought that would be good, but I wasn't. So I was one day I was at the Goshala, and some devotees said, oh, don't go back to the temple. They came, they're looking for you, arrest you. So I thought, that's weird. I just bribed these guys, 50 rupees, it was good then, what's going on? So I kind of snuck back, got my stuff, and I went to Delhi, and I bought a ticket to go to Kathmandu. I don't know if I'd already bought the ticket, but I was in the process. I had to go to the American Express for some reason to get some money. And while I was in there, it was a Kanat place or something. Gopal Krishna Maharaj, it wasn't Maharaj, it was Gopal Krishna, running up the stairs with somebody else. And he said, Prabhupada is leaving in 6 hours. He saw me there. Prabhupada is leaving in 6 hours. And I was like, we thought Prabhupada was staying for 10 years. We didn't know, even to that day. We still held out that kind of hope. And I said, well, can I go? He said, the car is filled. You will stay here. I will call you when Prabhupada leaves. Okay. So I was kind of shocked. I already had spent my last 500 rupees on the ticket. I had to go to Patna and then fly up to Kathmandu to try to get a new visa. And I also had that problem. So, and sure enough, at 7:14, we got the call. Jayo is there. Everybody remembers Jayo. So we picked up the phone, Gopal Krishna. I'm pretty sure in those days you couldn't call. That was why he called us. Couldn't call from Vrindavan because nowadays any rickshaw or man, anybody has a phone. You can call all over the world. You can call the moon or anything. But then you couldn't call. So. As soon as I got that call, I called Ramachandra, and it was a lightning call. In those days, you had to make a lightning call to get anything through. And we told, first Jayo got on the phone. I don't know whether they didn't believe him, but then he put me on the phone. I said, maybe he just didn't believe it. I would tell him. And then I went to Kathmandu next morning. And I came back 5 days later. They wouldn't give me any visa. Anyway. I flew into Patna and they said, you can't come into India, you have no visa. I said, no, my guru, he just left. Finally, he said, okay, you have 72 hours, which turned into a year and a half. Okay. Anyway, then there was a big celebration. So many people came in Vrindavan. Who was there? Hundreds and hundreds, thousands of people, and there was a big feast 5 days after. So, Sarva Jiva Ba Maro Ba, Prabhupada used to quote that in reference to his Guru Maharaj. Sarva Jiva Ba, either Jiva Ba Maro, Either he live or die, the sadhu, the guru, kirti asya sajivati, his fame goes on. He lives forever. There's nothing to be lamented. Prabhupada said that. If you read those last few weeks, few months, you'll find that over and over. Nothing to be lamented. He lives. Hare Krishna.
And then after that, Toshan Krishna Prabhu.
Some years ago, Malati Prabhu was inspired to make a book called The Bond of Love for the Prabhupada and his daughters. And for that end, she and a group of others interviewed hundreds of Prabhupada's disciples. And those interviews were transcribed. And somehow, I'm not sure exactly how, but I was given the task of transforming the transcripts into something that can be readable. Because when you speak, it's one kind of mood, and when you read, it's quite another. So I'm trying to take these interviews and make them into something that could be published in a book. So by Krishna's grace, by Prabhupada's grace, every day I take one of these interviews. Sometimes there are 20 pages or 10 pages. And I try to work with them so they're chronological and readable, you could say. And what strikes me is how Srila Prabhupada entered the lives of these wonderful ladies, flower-like ladies, and touched them irrevocably. You say, by regular reciting the Bhagavatam and by rendering service unto the pure devotee, all that is inauspicious in the heart is practically destroyed, and transcendental loving service is established as an irrevocable fact. It's such a wonderful word, irrevocable. It means it's never going to go back to the way it was. And that's the effect that Srila Prabhupada had on these lives. Of these young women that came to him. Not all of them were young. One was 50. But certainly the majority were young. And sincerely searching for answers, profound answers to profound questions. And they found that in him. And for me, I'm very grateful. I wanted to express my gratitude to Srila Prabhupada for allowing me to do this, because it's really a meditation for me. Each and every person that came and gave their life selflessly to his service, and trying to preserve the reason that they did that in their own personality, in their words. And simultaneously, my husband and I, in a small group, are trying to make a film about Srila Prabhupada's life and teachings. And for that, we have interviewed many people, about 18 devotees and professors. And very often, the interview will be 2 hours, and the film time for each person will be about 5 minutes. So that's another challenge. But what really strikes me is how people, especially professors, you know, they have their own religion, they have their own life, you could say, and yet they came in contact with Srila Prabhupada. Some of them, they did their dissertations for their PhD in the Bhagavad Purana, the Srimad Bhagavatam, and they came in touch with Srila Prabhupada through the Bhagavad Purana that he translated, or Srimad Bhagavatam, and they express how he was dedicated, how he was so loyal to his spiritual master, how he was so determined at such an advanced age to fulfill the desire of his spiritual master. And I have a deep appreciation for that, which really touches me. Also, we interviewed Sally Agarwal, who first hosted Prabhupada in Butler, Pennsylvania. And he came to her house in the middle of the night one night. It was his first night in America, and he slept inside of Agarwal's couch before he moved over to the YMCA in Butler, Pennsylvania. And she has such fond remembrances and such regard for him. Well, he, after he left Sally Agarwal in Butler, Pennsylvania, to go to New York City, he wrote her many letters. In one of the letters, he was describing how he was staying at 72nd Street in Manhattan. And that building where he was staying is an office building. It's not intended for residence. So for Prabhupada to bathe every day, he had to go through an ordeal. And a worse ordeal was for him to cook. He said in his letter to Sally Agarwal, "I don't even want to describe to you what an ordeal it is for me to cook each day, but I can only do it once a day because it's so problematic. And because I only eat once a day, at night I am feeling hunger pangs like starvation. I'm feeling night starvation." You know? So it's such a moving journey, showing his dedication, his determination, his loyalty to his spiritual master. And we're grateful that I could be involved in it in some small way. I remember Prabhupada.
And then after Toshan Mahatma.
Omajanati Mrandasya Jinanjana Salakaya Surumritam Jena Taishma Sundaravi Namaha. Bhagaji was mentioned by Pushkar Prabhu. He had a house very near the temple, and Srila Prabhupada trusted him very much. He was the first temple manager of the Krishna Balaram temple. Prabhupada was very concerned with every little thing. There's a story about ghee and cooking. He would ask questions like, Srila Prabhupada would ask that same question. So how much ghee is being cooked, used every day? What is he cooking? How many chapatis? How many devotees are eating? Fire the cook. Fire the cook. He's stealing. So Srila Prabhupada was able to calculate. He trusted Bhagavad. And Bhagavad was actually a great Vaishnava. And had retired, so to speak, in Vrindavan. Was performing sadhana there. And I went to him after Srila Prabhupada left and said, Bhagavad, I am confused. I personally don't think Srila Prabhupada's left, and I can't relate to the attitude that he has left, that we're going to notice at 7:14 or something like that, that we're going to have an RT rep of his moment of leaving. To me, he didn't leave. And Bhagavad laughed and he says, "Yes, there are two schools. They're both correct. And you can continue thinking like that." So in that mood, I'd like to remember Srila Prabhupada as he's here. As he is here. I can tell a few stories and then I'll get back to that. But he is here. Srila Prabhupada was very personal. When there was a lot of devotees assembling at the Boston Temple for his arrival in 1969, the temple was packed with people that had never seen Srila Prabhupada before. He sat up on the Vyasasan straight from the airport. He saw the Jagannath deities. And he says, "Oh, they are dressed very nicely. Who has made these dresses?" This was the first thing he said. And someone said, "Oh, Saradiya," that's how they pronounce it. Saradiya deities, Srila Prabhupada. Where is Saradiya? Yes. Where is Saradiya? He's looking The room wasn't lit up very well. "Where is Sharadeva?" He couldn't see. He goes, "Sharadeva, don't argue with your husband. Vaikunthanath is a nice boy." Only a handful of people knew who he was talking about. But he was the father, and he was talking about Sharadeva and her husband right there in public. The idea that Srila Prabhupada was willing to chastise was always there. We heard from Govinda Dasi today. She got a lot of chastisement from Srila Prabhupada, and Srila Prabhupada loved her very much. So that goes with it. It's not that Srila Prabhupada had an attitude about anybody. There was a guy that used to come to the San Francisco temple in 1968. He used to wear this, like a Merlin costume with literally stars and moons and everything. And he considered himself a Buddhist, and he would come in the temple and sit very rigidly and make no noise at all, kind of go into his own space. It was very impersonal. And he was always arguing with the devotees about impersonal philosophy. So when Srila Prabhupada came and gave a lecture there, he was sitting very near Srila Prabhupada's Vyasasan. And when the question period came, he raised his hand and he stared at Srila Prabhupada very intently and said, "Can you see God?" And Srila Prabhupada stared back at him very heavily and said, "No, you are in the way." And when it ended, I thought, "Oh, this guy's blown away. That's it. He's not going to come back." He stayed, and when Srila Prabhupada got off the Vyasasan, they had a chat. He was sparkling. The guy was very happy to be able to so thoroughly chastise by Prabhupada. So that was the effect. Once Kirtanananda, I was told this story by Hari Griva when I was living in New Vrindavan. I was actually Kirtananda's servant for a while. And he would always refer to Kirtananda Maharaj then as Ham, which was his last name. Just, "I'll tell you a story about Ham." And he told the story of how in, I think it was in 66 or 67, Srila Prabhupada was reading from Dr. Radhakrishna's Gita, in which he goes on to explain in the purport, Dr. Radhakrishna, that it's not unto Krishna that we should surrender, but to the unborn, unmanifest within him, and so forth. And then Prabhupada was about to proceed to launch into a major criticism of this Mayavad philosophy. But this was Srila Prabhupada's standard. He was always using that Gita and using it as an example of what not to do and bringing in the Bhakti philosophy. Gaudiya Vaishnavism. Well, Kirtananda raised his hand early and said, "Well, wait a minute. Maybe there's another way to look at this." And he starts defending that point of view. He starts defending the Mayavad concept in a kind of a funny way, the way Mayavadis do. And he starts talking away. So Hari Griva is explaining this to me while Kirtananda and I are all taking prasad, and Kirtananda is looking a little guilty. And he says, "So anyways, this was," he says, he's talking on and on, and finally Srila Prabhupada says, "Okay, are you through?" And Kirtananda says, no, I have a little more." So if you know Kirtananda Maharaj, it's like, yeah, okay. So he keeps talking. Finally says, "Are you through now?" He says, "Okay." And then Srila Prabhupada, on his dais, on his Vyasasan, stood up, staring down, and lashed into him, totally tearing apart with great energy the whole Mayavad conception. This is why Prabhupada came. Srila Prabhupada came to destroy the Mayavad philosophy. And we should know that. He came, and we're still doing it by engaging in this process of Bhakti Yoga. We should know that that's our mission. We should not tolerate it. The notion that that Mother Sukhita brought up today, that Srila Prabhupada is not just a person who came here, was adored by a certain following. He created a society. That society still exists, goes along, and so on and so forth. No, Srila Prabhupada changed the world, as this writer has indicated. And I'm hoping very much that Yadubara and Vishaka recognize that. That this is not a home film for those who can potentially adore an old man who came on a ship. And he did some wonderful austerities, and he was appreciated by some professors. No. He changed the worldview. The worldview, the way people perceive things in the world today, was changed by Srila Prabhupada. He set the tone. He's not just known and adored, and he had pastimes with a few people. He changed the modern world. I'm really hoping that that's what the film is going to be ultimately about, because that's the reality, and that's what has to be recognized. When we used to go to Wall Street to chant Hare Krishna, to have kirtan, in the beginning days, that was like, oh, do we really have to go there? Because that's the downer place to go. Everybody's really intense. They're very materialistic. It's not a fun place to chant. But we would go once a week. We would prefer to go uptown and Fifth Avenue or somewhere else. But we'd go there. And that was, in 60, 68, 69, 70 was like a downer place. But then later, I remember going in the 80s, and when I was visiting, and we went to Wall Street, and right outside the Wall Street Stock Exchange, there it was, people dancing with us, and it, total change. Because it had affected, it had sunk in, and people were thinking about it. And don't think we weren't noticed when the devotees would go out on the subways to collect. They quite often would quote Gita slokas to make it more transcendental. And I remember reading in the New Yorker magazine, it showed a subway packed with people, completely packed, as only New York subway practically can be. And in it, there was a devotee in the middle of it. And it say, and this was the joke. The joke was, if you offer me a fruit, flower, water, I will accept it. Now, this is, right? So they quote the Gita in the translation. So the devotees were chanting and people were listening. The Shabda is the message. Srila Prabhupada brought the sound vibration. And it affects. It takes effect. Prabhupada said it is like the fire. It heats the iron becomes red hot, and it is non-different from the fire. So when we are engaged in devotional service and we are delivering the Shabda, it is not going out as some advertising concept. No, it's transcendental. It's changing the atmosphere. It's changing the atmosphere. So that's what Srila Prabhupada was doing. So I just want to point out that just as Govinda Dasi was saying that Srila Prabhupada is still here, if he's still here and he is, then what can we say to Srila Prabhupada? What can we say in terms of our preaching mission? Prabhupada was a preacher, and he was very concerned with preaching, and he was very concerned with results. So we have to ask ourselves, what can we tell Srila Prabhupada? Because he'd be asking. So what's going on? And in the first phase of Srila Prabhupada's Leela of leaving Vrindavan, I was in there in renting the guest house, and Srila Prabhupada said he wanted to go back to New York. He said he wanted to go all the way to New York City This was in September of 77. And the devotees couldn't understand. Haven't you come here to leave this world, Srila Prabhupada, in Vrindavan? He said, no, I want to go back. I want to go to New York. And so the devotees said, well, Srila Prabhupada, what if you leave the world when you're in New York? He said, fine, put my samadhi on top of the building in Manhattan. Put it there. That was Srila Prabhupada's attitude about his preaching. Put the samadhi on top of that skyscraper building, he used to refer to it as, in Manhattan. So he wanted us to move out of the village. He didn't want us to stay there. He ordered us out. He said, don't stay there. He said, go uptown. Those were Srila Prabhupada's orders, and they haven't been fulfilled. So we have some work to do. And Srila Prabhupada's right here. Hare Krishna.